Today is Monday, December 21st, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, worries in Britain over a new strain of COVID-19.
The evidence suggests that it is much more transmissible than the known strain of the coronavirus, up to 70% more transmissible.
Also ahead, a look at COVID-19's economic impact in Africa.
Once the world economy rebounds significantly, African economy will rebound as well.
Plus, the UN Human Rights Office warns of crackdowns on free speech in Thailand. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in Britain, where a new strain of COVID-19 that emerged in recent months is spreading fears of a worsened outbreak. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said over the weekend that a new strain is 70% more transmissible than the earlier strain. The UK and its neighbours in the European Union are now scrambling to stop its spread. The UK has one of the worst outbreaks in Europe, with over 67,000 deaths, including an average of more than 460 deaths a day over the past week, according to Johns Hopkins University. For more, VOA's Jason Pantekin spoke to Henry Ridgewell in London.
So, first of all, can you explain what do we know and also what do we not know about this new strain of COVID-19?
What we do know about this new strain is that the evidence suggests that it is much more transmissible than the known strain of the coronavirus, up to 70% more transmissible, according to UK government scientists who have been monitoring the development of a possible new strain since September, particularly in the south of Britain, where caseloads have been building very significantly in the last 2 weeks, and they have really taken off since the November lockdown came to an end. So the government scientists have looked at this data and they have identified a new strain of the virus. Scientists say it appears to behave differently. They believe that the difference is that the protein spikes on the surface of the virus may attach to cells, human cells, in a different way. And that's what's causing it to be far more transmissible. The scientists believe at the moment that it doesn't make patients any more sick than the existing strains. And also they believe that the vaccines that have only been approved in the last couple of weeks here in Britain and in the United States and other countries will still be effective against it. But it's not 100% clear yet if that will be the case. This is early days. This is here in Britain. There is another strain that has been identified in South Africa as well, and scientists there haven't yet established the origins of that new strain as well. So worrying developments both here and in South Africa.
And how is the British government responding to the new strain?
Well, very dramatic new curbs were put on the British public on Saturday. The government had intended to allow all Britons to mix three households together over Christmas, over 5 days between the 23rd and the 27th of December. A very solemn-looking Prime Minister Boris Johnson made a televised address saying that all those plans were off. For many areas all over London and the south of England, they have moved into what the government has termed Tier 4, which is essentially like the very strict lockdown we had back in the spring. People aren't supposed to leave their homes apart from very specific reasons. There's no inside mixing of households, so all non-essential shops and services have been closed.
And what about Britain's neighbours in the European Union? What are they doing to prevent the spread of this new strain into their countries?
Yeah, so the news and Prime Minister Boris Johnson's address did send shockwaves really across the continent. And many countries, at least 15 countries, have now imposed travel restrictions on Britain. Many European Union countries, and the European Union is meeting today to decide on a coordinated response to the outbreak in Britain. Newspapers in Germany are reporting that all flights to and from Britain and the EU could cease until January the 6th. As we stand at the moment, the key trade artery and land-based travel artery for Britain to the European continent through Dover-Calais across the English Channel is effectively blocked. The French have closed that border. You can't get from Britain to France either on the train or on the ferry services. And many trucks are being blocked from coming the other way because many of the truck drivers don't want to be stranded in Britain once they come over here. And of course, that has huge implications for the supplies for Britain at a critical period over Christmas, when normally families stock up on all sorts of different goods. The supermarkets are warning that there may be shortages of some goods, although they say for now their warehouses are quite full and they're urging the public to stop panic buying.
That's Henry Ridgewell in London speaking to my colleague Jason Pantekin in Washington. Hong Kong and India said they would suspend flights from Britain due to the new strain in the UK. Meanwhile, Australia said Monday that it had detected cases of the new fast-spreading coronavirus strain. Two travellers from the UK to Australia's most populous state of New South Wales were found carrying the mutated variant of the virus. Both are in hotel quarantine, authorities said. Even so, New South Wales state on Monday reported its lowest one-day rise in new COVID-19 cases in 3 days. That has signaled cautious optimism that authorities have contained an outbreak in Sydney's northern beachside suburbs. Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters reports.
Australia's most populous state reported on Monday its lowest one-day rise in new COVID-19 cases in 3 days. The news has raised hopes that authorities may have managed to contain an outbreak in Sydney's northern beachside suburbs, where 250,000 people are on day three of a five-day lockdown. 15 new cases were reported on Monday, compared to 36 the day before. But more than 80 locations, including cafes and gyms across Sydney, were identified as having been visited by people who've since tested positive. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian said restrictions may need to stay in place for Christmas.
We need to monitor and make a final call on Wednesday as to what Christmas and the next few days will look like. And I appreciate people have plans in place. I mean, my family's no different to anybody else's. I think we all empathise with each other.
The government also confirmed it had detected cases in returned UK travellers of the fast-spreading new coronavirus strain found in Britain, but that the Sydney cluster strain did not have the mutations. The original source of that cluster is still unknown, but tests show the strain is almost identical to the one found in a woman who arrived in Sydney from the United States earlier this month. Meanwhile, other Australian states and territories have moved quickly to close their borders to all of Sydney's 5 million residents. Dozens of domestic flights due to leave the city on Monday were cancelled, and states have begun operating checkpoints along the border with New South Wales.
That was Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters. Now we look at COVID-19's economic impact in Africa. As COVID-19 vaccines roll out in Europe and the US, offering hope from the devastation of the coronavirus pandemic on communities and businesses, how have African economies fared, and what are the continent's challenges for a rebound? To find out, I spoke with Professor Colin Hendricks of the Joseph Cobell School of International Studies, University of Colorado, a non-resident senior fellow of the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
Sure. So overall, I think the region has been spared some of the very, very widespread loss of life due to COVID that we've seen in other regions. Even the hardest hit country, which has been South Africa, has seen impacts that are roughly equivalent to those that we're seeing in Canada, which is about 40 deaths per 100,000 people. Of course, that's tragic, but the magnitude of the tragedy is somewhat diminished in relative, at least, to some other countries and regions that have been much more impacted. North Africa is the region's second hardest hit sub-region, and its highest death totals roughly equivalent to those that we're seeing in Denmark. So in terms of the performance of the public health systems and in terms of loss of life, which is always catastrophic, the region has been somewhat spared. It's likely that the magnitude of the effects have been undercounted somewhat, especially in the lesser developed countries where testing may be more difficult due to gaps in healthcare systems. But the urbanization part of the story may actually work in the region's favor, as it has in places like New Zealand and Australia. Less densely populated areas tend to have less spread. And also Africa's relative youth as a region is working in its favor as well, given that the worst health effects of COVID are on the elderly. In terms of the economic effects, the region as a whole has seen a sharp contraction due to COVID-related recessions in their major export markets and softening of commodity prices due to decreased global demand. The effects of lockdowns in the early stages of the crisis were negative as well, as were the political ramifications. The outlook for Southern Africa moving forward is bad, but it was relatively bad had going into the crisis. So, for instance, South Africa had 30% at the outset of the crisis.
When do you think the rebound would come, if possible?
I mean, the rebound will come when the rebound comes in major export markets, frankly. Once the world economy rebounds significantly, African economy will rebound as well. Obviously, the relations outside of the region in terms of exports are going to be significant, but so will a resumption of normal economic activity within the region, even though levels of intra-regional trade are relatively low. When it does rebound, which hopefully will be in the second or third, maybe fourth quarter of this year, 2021, it will rebound to at least in South Africa, about a 2% growth rate in terms of GDP.
Do you think when the rebound comes, it's going to be business as usual, or as a result of the pandemic, things might be just a little bit different from what we used to know?
Coming on the heels of the financial crisis earlier this decade as well, I think that there's broad recognition within the economies of Africa that their orientation towards global markets and towards major export markets in Europe and in Asia and in North America is not necessarily a sustainable path moving forward. And I think that you're going to see broad recognition and broad moves towards reducing barriers to international trade and increasing intra-regional trade and investment to better link the African economies under a mantle of shared prosperity and a prosperous future.
Will it be effective for some of these African countries to invest in infrastructure or just social programs as a result of the pandemic?
The best case scenario would be all of the above in terms of investments in basic infrastructure, social services being important. I think that for long-term sustainability, making fundamental investments in basic infrastructure is important, but also investing in the human capital in terms of education and better access to healthcare is fundamentally going to develop the region's most important resource, and that's its people.
That's Professor Carlin Hendricks of the Joseph Kobal School of International Studies at the University of Colorado, a non-resident senior fellow of the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C. He was speaking from Denver. The U.S. is suffering the world's largest COVID-19 outbreak, averaging more than 215,000 new cases and over 26,000 deaths a day in the past week, according to Johns Hopkins University. Along with the pandemic's health toll in America, the economic cost is mounting. As many people stay home to avoid infection, workers are struggling with job losses, business closures, and evictions. U.S. congressional leaders said Sunday they had reached an agreement on a $900 billion package to provide the first new aid in months to an economy hammered by the coronavirus pandemic, with votes likely on Monday. Freddie Joyner of Reuters has more.
More help is on the way.
Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Sunday evening that a deal had finally been reached on a $900 billion package to provide the first new aid in months to an economy hammered by the coronavirus pandemic.
Moments ago, in consultation with our committees, the four leaders of the Senate and the House finalized an agreement. There'll be another major rescue package for the American people as our citizens continue battling this coronavirus this holiday season. They will not be fighting alone.
Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the package should have enough support to pass both chambers of Congress. The package would be the second largest economic stimulus in U.S. history, following the $2.3 trillion aid package passed in March. The new package would give $600 direct payments to individuals, boost unemployment payments by $300 a week, and give hundreds of billions of dollars in additional aid to small businesses. Sources said it would also provide $25 billion for rental assistance. The bill leaves out two of the most contentious elements in the negotiations: legal protections for businesses from coronavirus lawsuits, which had been sought by Republicans, and the substantial aid for state and local governments sought by Democrats. Sources briefed on the matter told Reuters on Sunday the deal was also expected to grant U.S. airlines $15 billion in new payroll assistance that will allow them to return more than 32,000 furloughed workers to their payrolls through March 31st. The Democratic-led House of Representatives will likely vote on the package on Monday, with the Republican-controlled Senate to follow.
That was Freddie Joyner of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. A German court has convicted a right-wing extremist of murder and attempted murder and sentenced him to life in prison for his attack on a synagogue last year on Yom Kippur, Judaism's holiest day. He killed two people after he failed to get entry into the building. The October 9, 2019 attack is considered one of the worst anti-Semitic assaults in Germany's post-World War II history. The 28-year-old defendant, Stefan Balliet, posted a screed against Jews before trying to shoot his way into the synagogue in the eastern city of Halle while broadcasting the attack live online. A cybersecurity watchdog says dozens of journalists at Al Jazeera, a Qatari state-owned media company, have been targeted by advanced spyware. Citizen Lab said Sunday it found the attempt to hijack 36 journalists' personal phones was linked to the governments of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The group traced the malware back to the Israel-based NSO group, which has been widely condemned for selling spyware to repressive governments. The attacks occurred weeks before the normalization of ties between Israel and the UAE, the arch-rival of Qatar. Emirates and Saudi authorities did not respond to requests for comments from the Associated Press. The NCO group cast doubts on the allegation, but said it had not seen the report. The chairman of the African Union Commission said that Ethiopia took, quote, legitimate, unquote, military action in its Tigray province to preserve the country's unity and stability. Moussa Faki Mahamat, speaking after the conclusion of a regional leaders' meeting on Sunday evening, said Ethiopia's military campaign in its Tigray province was, quote, legitimate for all states, unquote. Faki's statement comes amid accusations that Eritrea backed Ethiopia's campaign and allegations of human rights abuses committed by all sides. Ethiopia's government says the conflict is the law enforcement operation against senior leaders of the Tigray People's Liberation Front. TPLF leaders say it's a war against all of Tigray. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. For months, student-led protests in Thailand have demanded the Prime Minister stepped down and have called for reforms to the country's powerful monarchy. The protesters have been met with police force and arrests. Now the Office of the UN High Commission for Human Rights is expressing alarm at growing repression and clampdown on freedom of expression and assembly in the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In recent weeks, Thai authorities have charged at least 35 protesters, including a 16-year-old student, with defaming the country's royal family. A spokeswoman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Ravina Shamdasani, says the juvenile's arrest is particularly alarming. She says the young boy was arrested on so-called lèse majesté charges after participating in a fashion show mocking the royal family's fashion style. Lèse majesté is a provision of Thailand's criminal code that carries sentences of between 3 and 15 years imprisonment for defaming, insulting, or threatening the country's royal family. Shamdasani says the fashion show is part of a student rally organized as part of mass protests that have been going on for the past 4 months. Protesters are calling for an overhaul of the government and military, as well as reform of the monarchy. Shamdasani says the students and young boy were just exercising their right of free expression.
So to use a law which carries a sentence, a maximum sentence of 15 years imprisonment for this quote-unquote offense, does not fit in with Thailand's obligations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights with regards to the right to freedom of expression.
Spokeswoman Shamdasani says Thailand continues to ignore repeated calls from UN watchdog groups, including the UN Human Rights Committee, to bring its criminal law in line with the country's international treaty obligations.
It is extremely disappointing that after a period of 2 years without any cases, we're suddenly witnessing a large number of cases, and shockingly, now also against a minor. We also remain concerned that other serious criminal charges are being filed against protesters engaged in peaceful protests in recent months, including charges of sedition and offenses under the Computer Crime Act.
Human Rights Watch has said the act gives the government broad powers. The measure has been used to silence opposition to the government and monarchy. The UN's Human Rights Office is calling on the government to stop filing criminal charges against people exercising their right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. It says detaining people for exercising these rights constitutes arbitrary arrest or detention, which is prohibited under international human rights law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Japanese Prime Minister Yoshida Suga's government approved a ninth consecutive annual rise in military spending on Monday, funding the development of an advanced stealth fighter and long-range anti-ship missile to counter China's growing military power. Brian Wood reports.
Japan's prime minister approved a record-high military budget proposal on Monday for the country's ninth consecutive year. It includes funding the country's first stealth fighter jet in three decades from American arms producer Lockheed Martin. The country's cabinet secretary says Japan must strengthen its military to counter China's growing regional presence. Katsunobu Kato.
We as the Japanese government need to make our defense operations more efficient to correspond to the increasingly severe security environment.
Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga's record budget proposal jumped 1% from last year. And with his party being the majority in parliament, it's likely the Ministry of Defense will receive the almost $52 billion in April. Despite a constitution that forbids the possession of offensive weapons, Japan is one of the world's biggest military spenders. Suga is continuing in the controversial footsteps of predecessor Shinzo Abe, who reversed more than a decade of military cuts. Suga's administration is considering training Japan's self-defense forces to strike distant land targets in China, North Korea, and other parts of Asia. China plans to raise its military spending by almost 7% this year.
Thanks to Brian Wood of Reuters for that report. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. And on behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, our colleague, Jason Pantekin, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinny Rofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Moderator Michael Williams and a panel of Washington experts as they analyze the top news stories of the week, including U.S. Congress is set to act on a $900 billion COVID-19 relief package to businesses, individuals, and resources for vaccines. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. Every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source.